He's not here. I'd like to say congratulations to him that he got a new baby in the weekend. So that's why he's not here. So my talk is on holographic QCD and PI. So I'd like to give you a brief review of a certain model in holographic approach to QCD, and that has a really amazing result, such as reproducing meson spectrum, baryon spectrum, and reproducing chiral Ramanujans, and so on. So those are really neat, in the sense that, of course, QCD has a strong coupling. So if you want to work out those really serious bound state physics, you have to pay attention to, for example, lattice results, so on. But string theory can provide this interesting view of strong coupling physics of QCD. That is a holographic way of seeing that. Although it works in only in large end QCD, but you can say that any hosted field is enough large or for having these convincing results. But so there are many models on holographic QCD, and that can, so you can, for example, start from some deep brain configurations in string theory, or you can, for example, start from some so-called bottom-up approach, in which you assume certain kind of holographic background, which is the gravitational geometric background in higher dimensions. And then you put some matter fields, which is in correspondent with some boundary fields, which represents, for example, chiral currents and meson spectrum and so on. So there are many, many approaches, but among them, there is a certain model which is called Sakai-Sugimoto model, which has a really nice feature.
What is it called?
It's called Sakai-Sugimoto. I'm going to review that. So here is the plan of my talk. So first, I will explain what is good about this holographic approach in QCD, and in particular this Sakai-Sugimoto model. And then there, unfortunately, there is a serious problem of having just massless quarks. So we have to, of course, introduce quark masses to reproduce any kinds of low-energy physics of hadron dynamics. But unfortunately, this Sakai-Sugimoto model suffers from just having massless quarks. So now I explain my idea for introducing a quark mass to that model. So that's just an improvement of this really nice model made by Sakai and Sugimoto. So of course, if you introduce quarks, massive quarks to QCD, then that breaks chiral symmetry explicitly. Then what you get is to have a pseudo number of Goldilocks boson of pi, which was a number of boson if you have an exact kind of symmetry spontaneous breaking. But if you, so I'm saying that if you introduce quark masses, that breaks the chiral symmetry explicitly, and then pi is massive. And the pion is the meson, which has the lowest mass. So if you want to probe any dynamics of hadrons, then you have to introduce this pion somehow to have any realistic model building for a QCD. So that is my talk consists of 10. I have 10 pages for explaining this my motivation, and 5 pages for this idea. And just 2 or 3 pages for these computations. So please don't mind if I present really complicated calculations. Please understand my idea for how to introduce pion mass in this system.
You're saying that only you get pion mass, but you can also get some meson spectra?
Oh, sure, yes.
Are you going to explain that?
Right, yes. So, of course, Sakai-Sugimoto gave many interesting results. Those are predictions for hadron physics. But so they lack in having this pion mass. So I introduced this pion mass. And then how I can see the modification to the results. OK. So here is a really brief snapshot of holographic QCD. So we like to apply ADCP correspondence coming from string theory to QCD. Although it is really in large limit, which can be validated, so this correspondence can be validated, but it should work for analyzing stone coupling regime of QCD, because in the size of CFT boundary theory, you have a stone coupling physics. But if you go to alias side, then you have just a weak coupling physics. And there, for example, there are various, many, many results on how, so for example, how to interpret various hadron physics in terms of gravitational dual description. And also, it's not just having a dual description, but it is actually predictive. And there are many predictions from alias QCD. Among them, for example, I listed just a part of them. So meson and baryon spectra, and Kyle-Lagrangian and interactions between mesons and baryons, and also thermal phase transitions and QCD phase diagram in large M. And also, there are really an excitement in having RIP experiments in which you have gold and gold nucleons to collide, and then you create quark gluon plasma state. And there you observe so-called jet quenching, and it is understandable in terms of viscosity in fluid state of QCD. So all these real physics can be explained in string theory. So that's really amazing. And here is the Sakai-Tsujimoto model. So I have to start with some string theory configuration where I have here D4 brains and D8 brains intersecting to, with this D4 brain. And the D-brain configuration is like this. We have X1, X2, X3 space along which our space leads. And in addition to that, I have X4 space. And along that, I impose anti-periodic boundary condition for gauge nodes. And resultantly, we have 1 plus 4 dimensional pure oil nodes at low energy. I mean, low energy below the scale of this Clausen Klein energy scale. So this was done by Witten, and he used this background, so the background geometry for describing this D4 brain with anti-periodic boundary condition for photons. And then he got some description of dual geometry to the and Sakai-Tsujimoto what they did is to add this D8 brain and the D8 bar brain on this background. So they prepare for NFD8 and NFD8 bar brains. Those are intersecting with the D4 brains. And then from this D-brain configuration, you have left-handed quarks and right-handed quarks from these each intersections. So for example, from D8 and D4, if you count the number of co-dimensions, then that has 6. So if you have co-dimension 6 D-brain intersections, then you have massless chiral filaments. And if you flip the orientation of D8 brain like this, then you have right-handed filaments. And this is exactly what you need for giving having a QCD, because you have to add right-handed and left-handed quarks to this pure Young nodes. So this is exactly what the content of massless QCD. Of course, there are many other ways to realize this massless QCD, but this has a nice point compared to other models, which I will explain.
One question, it has V8 brain and V8 bar brain.
Right.
Not stable?
So there is a, so this is a metastable. So there is a gravitation, there may be a gravitational attraction force between these two in this compact space. But you can say that this, for this, I get just a, say, open string dynamics rather than having a gravitational about physics. So what I'm going to do is to leave these D8 brains as just a probes, and then replace this D4 brain by its geometry. So then, what I'm doing is neglecting the gravitational mode, which make these two guys interact with each other. So there is actually a instability mode, but I can neglect them. I'm not sure if it's a validated process or not, but I just so to evade from the complication of having all of these things in terms of gravitation. I just leave these two as probes.
Sorry, what do you mean by good photographic models? Can you explain the word good photographic model?
Ah.
What is bad about this model?
Yes, I'm going to explain that, yes. So before doing that, let me explain how this model works. So replacing this default brains by the geometry with these given matches, a near horizon geometry, I mean. Then in this case, so you explicitly have gravity background geometry, and then you just take the near horizon limit, and then you apply the interesting principle of area CFT. Then at the boundary, this should describe the strong coupling regime of massless large and QCD.
Would you mean usual QCD? Or?
Yes, of course, but I have to change the ramp of the QCD.
Sorry? Yeah.
Okay. Is that okay?
Maybe it's just my question, but how can you, so you say you can extend the usual ADS-CFT correspondence to.
Right, so there is no way to validate this kind of process. But if you believe that ADS-CFT works for this background supersymmetric breaking geometry, then because we have started from this D-brain configuration and there at low energy we have the exact amount of particle masses, then we would think that this is actually.
Wait, this is non-supersymmetric?
Non-supersymmetric.
But can you decouple all this garbage from multiplying?
No, no. So that's really a bad point of this.
So yeah. I have a question. If you're talking about real QCD, there's not really a notion of weak coupling and strong coupling.
Right.
There's only just one coupling.
Sure. Yeah.
Just a notion of infrared or ultraviolet.
That's right.
How do you understand
really,
this correspondence?
Yeah, that's, I think, really important.
You cannot really.
Sure. That's an interesting question. And I think nobody has solved that question in the sense that QCD has an asymptotic freedom.
Yeah.
So if you go to high energy, then that should be weakly coupled.
Yeah.
But if you want to apply QCD or ADS-CFT, then I think you have to remain at some lower scales, which is determined by the QCD scale.
So is the idea that when you describe infrared physics, then the gravity is
right.
The description?
Yes. That's a major idea of ADS-CFT. So, well, for example, if you want to reproduce the radio behavior, then you have to go to higher energy region. So it should be difficult to capture that radio behavior in terms of string theory. You can use
string theory came from radio behavior.
That's right. That's true. But if you, what I mean is that if you apply it, it's incident.
To capture asymptotic freedom, that's really hard. But
right.
Yeah, I guess that's part of the question. What asymptotic freedom means in this?
Well, that's
a correspondence.
So this is just a procedure we follow from the principle. Okay. Okay. So I don't know how what it happens if you actually go from the coupling. So that's a problem. So as I said, I use a probability brain assumption. Where maybe this is validated if energy is larger.
So probe just means you don't worry about the background, the
right,
back reaction.
Right.
That's all.
That's and that basically means that I'm working in Quinn's QCD rather than considering the old for the root correction. Okay. And also we have of course about gravity dynamics made of this geometry, and those should give blue. And here is a very nice point about this stochastic model. So we have started from this picture, and now we replace the default brains by the geometry, and then you get this one. So here I wrote just this geometry. This is actually a smooth geometry here, but it terminates around the core of this picture. And the resultantly, so this D8 brain and D8 bar brain should.
So slow down.
Yes.
The gluons are the D4 strains.
Yes.
The quarks are D4 D8 strains.
Right.
D8 D8 strains are some UU1 or what?
Ah, so D8, yes. There are D8 strings like this.
Yes.
But so those.
Is there some good gauge group associated with them?
Yes, so if you have NNF D8 brains, then there is a UNF gauge group. And they have their particular gluons of gauge groups.
Okay, so I'm sorry, there are NFD, not just one D8, but
NFD. We have NF.
Okay, so that's the flavor group.
Yes.
But it's a gauge group.
It's a gauge group, but if you think of this as a probe, and then you look at just the dynamics of this D4 brain,
yeah,
then what is concerned is just these quarks and gluons on D4. And those D8 brain modes seem to be decoupled in this weak coupling.
But do you mean they're massive?
No, it's not massive. Of course, those are just masses. But if you look at this physics, so what you do is to compare two low energy dynamics of these. So if you take a low energy limit, then low energy limit concerning this D4 brain makes the coupling of this gauge group to zero, because it's a dimensional cost. That so in this weak coupling description, if you look at the low energy dynamics of this D4 brain, then you have gluons and quarks and gauge groups. Just that.
But the point is, in the bulb, you have 8 strains.
In the bulb. In the bulb, yes. So if you take the bulb, low energy in place.
The dynamical.
Right. So here, if you take, if you replace the D4 brains by the geometry, then what happens is that D8 and D8 bar is connected. So first of all, those gate groups of D8 and D8 bar serve as the kind of symmetry in QCD. But now, if you go to strong coupling by replacing the geometry, this by geometry, then what you see is the spontaneous kind of symmetry break, because you have just a single UNF group rather than the product of these. And because you connected those two, then this should be a vector part of this product. So it is a spontaneous kind of symmetric break by a strong coupling effect.
So, what is the difference
the chiral symmetry should change the phase of these quarks.
Yeah.
So for this left-handed quark, you have a UNF gauge rotation of the
right.
Brains. Right. That should serve as a global signal.
Right.
And in addition to that, you have a UNF.
Right.
But after you go to the strong coupling regime, then those are connected. And D4 brings
I see.
So now you have a single or NF, just NF V8 brains. And the gauge group is just this. So this is a unbroken chiral symmetry. And that is just a vector part of this. So that's how this works. Okay, so this is an upshot of the Sakai-Shimoto. Vector and scalar mesons, and those are identified as counterfly modes of gauge fields on the connected probe D8. So on the D8 brain, here you have quarks, but now those are connected and D4 brain disappear. So the quarks should form a bound state, and bound state is identified as the gauge fields on this D8 brain. So now those gauge fields should serve as the bound state of quarks. And those
these
are
gauge fields are on the 8 brain.
Right.
So these are rows, omega, rows,
yes.
A1,
right. Correct. So those are realized as counterfly modes of this for the brain in this background. And you can compute, for example, the chiral Lagrange. That is just the probe D8 brain action in terms of these counterfly expanded states. And also you have many more. For example, you can compute variance spectrum and polarization in local symmetries and so on. And those results are quite consistent with observed experimental findings, which I will show in a moment. And if I compare this model to other holographic models, then This model is very good because spontaneous parasymmetry breaking is seen in geometry, like this. And also, it has a clear understanding of its weak coupling definition, which I stated before. So we have started from some certain D-brain configuration of that get reduced to a strong coupling region.
Is this T-dual through the 7-brain, 3-brain?
Well, it's T-dual to D3, D9, D9. If you have a D7, then D7 should be parallel to the D3. So there are such kind of models, but they don't have this realization parallel. So here I'm using a result of the Sakai Street model. So this is the experimental values for raw meson masses and A1 prime and so on. And this is the result of the Sakai Street model, where this is the input, and these are the predictions. And also for chiral regions, for example, for this certain term, which is called Sturm term, if you expand this in terms of some basic chiral region terms, then you have three kinds of coefficients. And this is the experimental observed values of these predictions. So it should, it looks really good. And they match with each other in a certain, for example, 30% error.
Are you going to explain how you compute the vector meson spectra?
Sure. After I introduce the pile meson. But here is a program of the Sakai model, which I already mentioned. So the D-brain configuration, which we have started with, that severely constrains the model. And here is the problem which I'm going to resolve. So the pile is massless. There is no explicit breaking of the chiral symmetry. Well, for example, if you look at D4, D6 model, which was innovated by these people who sense the Kuznetsky Myers inverse, then they have an explicit breaking of chiral symmetry. But unfortunately, they don't have a really good way of understanding the spontaneous chiral symmetry breaking, especially when you introduce multi flavors. And this is a severe modified question, which is a non-decoupling higher recognition degrees freedom. But I don't like to mention this because this is a serious problem. So I just neglect those unnecessary concept platforms.
That's a problem with all the models.
Right.
The universal.
Sure. Yeah. But that's right. So people say that for bottom-up models, like you started with just 1+4 dimensional ABS space, couple of ABS space, then there is no problem like this. But it's a different problem. So why are pions are massless in this Sakai Street model? So the answer is really easy. The answer is because quarks are massless in this D4D8 system, so there is no explicit chiral symmetry breaking, so pions are exactly massless. Then why quarks are massless in Sakai Street model? Because it's really difficult to separate D8 brain from D4 brain. So if you can separate D4 and D8, then strings are stretched between those, and that applies the max. But here, you look at this brain configuration, and you want to separate this D4 brain from D8 brain, then there is no D8. Well, you can say that we can go to M3, but in M3, of course, we lose the definition of these things. Okay. So this is my motivation. And of course, as I said, it's really important to introduce massive pion for constructing more realistic models. If you could introduce massive pions, then it allows us to understand really good, low-energy effective physics of quantum mechanics. And also, we should be able to look at spontaneous versus explicit breaking of characteristics. So we introduce the pion mass in the Sakai Street model and see those. So here's my idea. So we have started with this configuration. And let me deform this like this. Okay. Then in a different way of looking at this picture is like this. So this deformed brain is now replaced by this horizontal vertical line. And these two are the D8 brains. and we compactify this direction, then you get this. And so higher dimensional viewpoint of this deformed form is this, where you have a float which connects the V8 and the bar. And in between, this D4 brain is just penetrating this hole. So there is no intersection between D4 and V8. And now, V8 are connected not by the background geometry, as we have seen in the Stone Cotton Remit. But now, even in the flat space-time, we see the connection between V8 and V8. So please note that we are not going to, so at this stage, we are not going to the Stone Cotton region, but we are working in a flat space. And now quarks are expected to be massive, because D1 and D8 are separated from each other, and there is no intersection points like this. So left-handed quarks and right-handed quarks merge with each other, and they form left and right massive Dirac field. Have any question?
What keeps the Dirac brain stable?
Ah, yes, I'll come to that point. Yes, at this stage, this is really unstable.
So there's some flux that turn on or something that will generate this?
Yes, exactly. So how can we connect D8 and D8 by that way, even in a flat space, which is a weak component? So we deform this in such a way that D8 and D8 bar are connected. But to make this stabilized, we need to introduce different D-brain charge or flux on the D8 like this. So suppose that you have some additional D-brain charge out here, but nothing else, nothing here. Then to have a charge conservation condition of this and this, and if you require that these D-brain charges are just bound on the D-brain surface, then of course, charge conservation shows that this D-brain charge should go this way. But in addition to that, D8 and D8 bar should be connected because that is bound on the D8 surface. And to achieve this, we introduce just additional D4 brain charge, which I call a D4 prime brain, bound on the D8 brain. And there is a famous broad D8 brain configuration which realizes completely this kind of configuration. That is called broad D8 with D4 bound state configuration, or in other words, it's called BI. It is a solution of Baron-Hinfeld Lagrangian. And that has been explored by Karan and Magnusson. And in particular, for this D8, D4, it's TDL to D5, D1 configuration that has been found by constant noise. But here is a toy model. So let's consider just a cylinder connecting D8 and D8 bar, and I put D4 prime charge like this. And let's assume that the distance between these two is L. And I compute the tension or energy of this configuration. It's really easy to count that. So first, this potential is given by the area of D8 brain, and in addition to that, area of D4 brain. And here, minus R to the fifth, is the volume of this S4. And you have to bring this out from this D8 brain surface so that there are a hole. There is a hole here. And L times R to the fourth is the area of this cylinder surface. But in addition to this, I have this term. If you end up with just this term, then it gives you just an unstable configuration. But if you add D4 brain this way, here I subtracted this minus R in the same speed as this, and plus L, which is the length of this D4 brain. Then I got this picture. So that is just what you need to have a local mean of this potential figure. So this is really like the so-called quasi square or Myers effect in the background flux. So if you put diesel brain and that pops up to the state of D brain, and that is just the minimum of this, a local minimum of the state. And that, of course, there is a quantum tunneling process from this to this, and in the same way as Myers quasi square configuration is quantum mechanically unstable. But now we are just looking at a classical process. So we are just fine with this local. And if you compute the radius of this throat, which is denoted by small r, then hook mass should be proportional to this r. You find that this r is just L squared over L. And if you multiply the spring tension, which is 1 over L squared, then you get 1 over L, which is a finite mass. You can actually take the knowledge. OK, so I have to describe this D4 prime grain to have this throat in the ABS QCD. Now, how do you describe this D4 prime grain bound on the A? Then the answer is quite straightforward. That is Young's instanton on DA, because you have just co-dimension 4 D grain on DA. So that should be Young's instanton. And now the direction of the D4 prime grain fourth volume is along the radial direction. As you can see from this picture, this is S4. And this D4 prime grain is perpendicular to this S4. So it's along radial direction. Then, what we need is just introducing Young's instanton in this angular force field, which is this R4, of the probe DA grain model. And there is a tunable parameter in this model, which is the instanton size, which I denote by new inputs. And if you take size to 0, then D4 prime grain can be separated from DA grain as a well-known transition of small instanton similarity of D brains. Then, if you you can separate this D4 brain and bring it to far away, then that reduces to the surfacing of the original setup. So this mu prime instanton size parameter is a perturbation to the surfacing model. And the other way of saying that, if you take zero size instanton, then accordingly you have zero size of this hole. Then radius becomes zero, and mass you have massless force. That is that. Those are your sizes. So here is a summary of.
Okay, so the radius is just a free variable that you can tune.
Well, you have to work out the dependence on this size, instanton size. So given the instanton size mu, then you can compute the radius.
What is the input that becomes eventually the quark mass?
That is this.
That means
that
what is it for the dynamics of the string theory?
Sure. Yes, I omitted all the dynamics here, but if you have the
instanton size, it's just a modulus that you can vary.
That's right. So so for any given instanton size mu, you can compute this throat configuration, and you can measure the radius.
But now that instanton size can vary from place to place? I mean, is it a modulus or something?
Yeah, I would say that it's a modulus.
So does that
in the sense that it can vary.
Does that mean that the quark mass can vary from place to place?
No. So let me explain that a little more.
What is in this box? Double box.
Box here.
Isn't there a massless field or maybe not?
No. The fluctuation of this size moduli is getting massive. But it's a normal.
So it fixes the size.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the question is, what is it that fixes the size?
So I fix that by my hand, because it's a non-normalizable mode. So there is no dynamical freedom.
It's a non-normalizable
mode. Right. But it's a zero.
You just fix it by non-normalizable.
Yeah. So how it works is like this. So you have DA brain and DA brain. Now they are connected by a fault. And you put instantons on S4. And size is roughly corresponding to this width of the D4 brain, which is basically bound on.
But is there some radial direction that corresponds to scale size on this diagram?
So mu inverse is a dimensionless parameter. And I put, so if you magnify here, you have S4, of which you have instant. and the insulin size of people are where the radius of this spore is taken from the unit, because this is an unreal space. Right? And then if you, let's consider first the homogeneously distributed instant fields. And then there is no reason to deform this S4. So it's a completely spherical thing. But if you change the distribution of the instant field, then it gets deformed like this. Right? And how are deformed brains are penetrating this picture like this? So in this picture, those color membranes are located at the center of this SP. Right. And now here in the homogeneous distribution, forks are coming from this.
I understand.
Yeah, but now it has a shorter side left. And then if you completely localize the instanton, then the fork mushes. So that's how it works. So what you do is that first you give the instanton size, then you solve the Dirac bone interaction equation motion, and then you compute this. So this is a very simple idea. So first we need to connect the data to the body of flat space, and then we introduce another default prime branch, which is interpreted to the Young's instanton in force field. Then what you do is really straightforward. We have to reanalyze the sizing model with the instanton back. And then we get hadron spectra of the interaction with acid ions. Okay. So I go on to the computation of the time. So here comes the equation. So what we do is to compute the fluctuation spectra of the probe D8 brain action in the background geometry of default brains. But in addition to that, I have to add Young's instantons in S4. So the starting point is just the usual D8 brain action, which is expanded in alpha prime, and we get just the Young's action in the curved background. And the induced metric from the default brain geometry looks like this, where you or here, I changed the coordinate space from u to x bar z, which is parameterizing this direction. And on this z, I have to make a concentrated reduction to four-dimensional space-time to get the infinite power of mesons. And the instanton is a classical solution in the angular force sphere, which is perpendicular to this this z direction. So this S4, which I have shown here, is completely perpendicular to this picture, which is obvious if I go back to this two identification. So we are working in this kind of picture, but if you go one more higher dimension, then you have radial and angular directions. But I'm working just in this Z plane, so there is no in this figure are positive dimensions, but the S4 variables. But in the Lagrangian, in addition to AZ, we have four additional gauge fields, which are the gauge fields leading from the angular force field. And Sakai Simotov did the following. So first they worked out the counterpoint mode from AU, which is this. Then they get vector mesons. And in addition to that, you have AZ, which is the additional gauge field in the higher dimensions. Then they get pi. But this is meson. Then we do the same fluctuation analysis in the background. And in particular, we concentrate on this AZ because that is related to the pi. Okay. So let's do the consequent reduction for the S4 first. And then I expanded the Young's Lagrangian this way. So it's just rewriting the F mu F mu Lagrangian to the components. Then the important part is this one and also this one. So this is coming from FIZ term. But and that includes the pi. But now we have a classical solution of instanton like this. AI, whereas this I variable is angular variable for the S by S4. Then I get a mask term from this commutator score. So it's fairly easy. What we have to do is to decompose the, all of the fields in terms of S4 Calcifrian eigenvalues. And the eigenequation looks like this, where rho is the variable which is related to the size of the instanton. But never mind. I get, if I do the Calcifrian reduction to 4 plus 1 dimensions, then I get this one object. So these are the usual kinetic terms for vector mesons and pions. But in addition to that, I have mass terms. And then, as Sakai's model did, I have a radial Calcifrian reduction. And then, what I have is, I just skip this. This final argument, where you can see phi A, which is a pion, and pion mass term, and also vector mesons, where M is M log of the infinite number of vector mesons. And this is a vector meson mass term. And those are, and the remaining things are just interaction terms. I have to diagonalize this. And the result is this. Mu inverse is the tunable parameter which I have. And if I choose that to some value around here, around about 13, then I get pi, which is exactly reproducing the observable value. Where I put this rho maximum mass as an input, and then I tune this mu inverse to reproduce the observable value.
Okay, let's see. So what is the input? The input,
input is the rho maximum mass.
The input is the rho mass.
Yes, and I tuned this instant size to reproduce the pi.
Mu corresponds, roughly speaking, to the mass of the quark.
Yep.
Can you say roughly what mass of the quark that corresponds to?
Yes, so I will come to that point in the next session. Yes.
Is it obvious that the Calcifrian modes are in one-to-one correspondence to physical mesons that you're using in now somewhere?
Well, so from this AMU, you have infinite number of Calcifrian modes, and yeah, those are identified with the vector mesons. So now we have a comparison to the Sakai's Moto model. So their result should be instant size zero, where core mass is zero. So their result is this, and this is the actual observed value of the A1 meson rho prime axis. And here is just a little bit deviation from the model. So I would say that the meson spectrum of Sakai's model is not much modified, even if you include quark mass force. Okay, so finally I compute the corresponding chiral Lagrangian to see what kind of perturbation I'm going to add to this
mask. Can you calculate F5?
F5, yes, yes. But that's what I'm going to do from now. So now you know that chiral symmetry is just the gauge symmetries of D8 and D8 bar, but now they are connected to each other. And so the chiral symmetry should be a gauge transformation taken at z equals to plus infinity or minus z equal to infinity corresponds to the upper side of the gauge, right? And z equals to minus infinity corresponds to the lower side. So this g plus and g minus defined in this way should be the ingredient of the gauge transformation of the currency, which is SUNF times this. And now, the building block of the chiral Lagrangian is this, where you usually use this notation of u as a non-linear realization of pi, where u is exponential of pi over divided by f pi, the decay constant. And now you can identify this u in the higher dimensional language as this path order product of exponential integral of az. Because if you define this in this way, then u will be transformed under this chiral symmetry as this, And that is exactly what you want as an ingredient of the color. And now, in addition to that, we have a classical configuration of AI. And that should be served as an explicit external source point in the color perturbation theory. And if you understand this as a defined like this, in the same way as this one, then you have AI plus and AI minus, although they are equal to each other, they transform as in a different way. AI plus transforms as G plus inverse, AI minus is using G minus instead. Okay, so in the spirit of chiral Lagrangian, what you do is to write down an explicit and generate a Lagrangian which is invariant under this transformation. But now we are working instead in ADCFT. So we don't need to invoke this spirit of a chiral Lagrangian construction. But we can actually derive the chiral Lagrangian from just the DA brain action in terms of this value. Then what you do is just to go to the AZ equals to zero gauge. Then what you observe is that mu and AI, those are other gauge fields, are written in terms of U inverse del mu U, which appears in the chiral Lagrangian in the usual way. Right? So what you do here is just move to this gauge and use this definition of U and AI plus minus to write down the DA brain action.
You go to AZ equals before AZ equals prime.
Yes. AZ has a prime, but if you go to AZ equals to zero gauge, then that information should move on to mu. And here, you can see that u inverse, or u appears here, and u is including pi. And here is the result. So we have a really complicated Lagrangian of written in terms of u of ai, but it's straightforward to evaluate, for example, many, many coefficients from this Lagrangian. And that is directly corresponding to some chiral Meson and apparent Meson interactions in, say, weak or other experiments. And I'm not going to show all the details, but here the most important point is the prime master. And let me understand how it goes. So if you write a certain terms coming from this complicated Lagrangian, then the result is this, where you have the usual pion kinetic term. And then in addition to that, you have this term. This is written by U inverse AI plus U AI. And if you expand this U in this way, as usual, the pion, then this has a quadratic pion mass. So that's how you get the pion mass from this theory. And of course, the difference from the usual chiral perturbation is that you can compute this coefficient C explicitly. So you can compute the coefficients. And now you can see that this Lagrangian is invariant under the chiral symmetry, like this. And because this U has an expectation value, the unity, this chiral symmetry is spontaneously broken, and the deviation from this expectation value is taken to be the pi. So that's how the non-linear realization of pi is constructed. Okay, so we have a pi mass term, but unfortunately, this is different from the usual pi mass term in the chiral Lagrangian. Usually, we have this kind of mass term for the pi, where u times m is inside the trace, and M is the full Meson matrix, which is like in a two-flavor situation, you have MU1, MB, up 4-1, down 4-S. And this transforms as G plus inverse and G minus. So the gauge invariant or flavor invariant combination is this, U and that. So this is the usual way of writing down the quark mass term, pion mass term coming from the quark. But ours is different. It goes like this. So what's wrong with this? So this is understandable in the sense, in the viewpoint from the kind of charge of the external fields, where I have instantons, this instanton, and those are transformed in this way. But this is different from the usual transformation for the mass matrix. And the possible perturbations which we are thinking of might not be the Bohr master, or rather than that, we might have Bohr fermions like this, which is consistent with this. Or another possibility is that we are just having a higher order terms in the Bohr master, where if you understand AI plus as MM Daga and AI minus as M Daga, then what we have is consistent with all the flavor symmetries, and we get this one. And this is something like what is called Stern phase. Stern phase.
You're saying that the quark mass does not enter the meson mass in the usual way?
Right.
So this is going to upset things like Gell-Mann-Oxmeyer, all the.
Sure. Yeah. So this way of introducing the quark mass does not.
The connection between quark masses and meson masses is going to be non-standard.
Right. So there is no Gell-Mann-Ox, right?
Isn't it what you expect? Because the meson spectrum basically controls by this cosine grand scale length away from this.
So I'm not sure about that. I don't know
more than just PCD, right?
But
the same scale.
So here, but I introduced a certain scale which can be tuned by hand, and that can be taken to be arbitrarily smaller than the classical scale. So I should expect that so the usual higher so Bohr mass stabilization should be appearing independent of this consequence. That's what I thought, but here unfortunately if I use this the instantons, that certainly gives you some external chirosymmetric rating, but not in the standard way, but in a somewhat similar to the so-called Stern phase.
But I'm confused because I would have thought that just standard chiral perturbation theory would give you the first term.
This one?
Yeah.
Right. But here, the problem seems to be that we have instantons, and that transforms like this, and not in this way. So if it is possible to introduce some external source which transforms in this way, then that should be serving as the usual form. But now we don't have that one. So the final result seems to be that it's possible that it's different from the Bohr mass and Bohr term, or we're just having higher orders in Bohr mass. So we cannot distinguish these two possibilities because we got the Lagrangian from the first place because this is a different form function. So I don't write the generic chiral Lagrangian. In the spirit of AES QCD, we just compute the DA reaction and what idea exists. So that.
This is going to change the standard calculation of quark masses.
That's right. I'm not saying that it may change a lot. So there are certain problems with associated with this type of term. But for example, I don't have this, but I have this. So this one does not change the U1 part of the class. So we have a UNF plus UNF parasymmetry. And if you introduce the quark mass term in this way, then that also breaks U1 parasymmetry. But here, if you introduce external source transforming like this, then this does not break the U1 axial.
So the eta prime is the massless.
Eta prime is massless, yes. But as you know, eta prime suffers from the anomaly of the U1.
Oh, you what we're doing? This is large n?
This is large n, so yes.
Eta prime should be massless.
Sure. Yes, you said about computer that it is consciousness, but in reality, of course, we are not with the logic. So, yeah, so phenomenologically, this is not consciousness. Okay, so here is a summary. So I added to Sakai's model this additional default prime charge, and that gives you a local deformation of the deuterine shape. And then you get explicit chiral symmetry breaking, and you get massive pions, which can be tuned to be consistent with orthogonal values. And you can introduce arbitrary small pion mass, so that makes you think that this is understandable as a perturbation to Sakai's model. And meson spectrum, which I obtained, is not out much from the results of Sakai's model. And the float picture, of course, suggests a core complex, but chiral emergent computation shows that it may be possible to have just a full film complex, or this can be considered as a higher order complex. And here is a final discussion. So I introduced chiral mass for the SUNF part, but the uaxial part remains massless because instanton doesn't. Is not coupled to the U1, overall U1 part in the reagent action. But as I said, this is not consistent because eta prime is from the first place, it's massive. But even though, if you want to introduce a pion mass for the axial U1 part, then you can work with the non-commutative instant on the full sphere. If you introduce non-commutativity, then even in U1 case, you can introduce instant ones. Then, if you tune the non-commutativity parameter, then that can tune the pion mass of U1 axiom. So this is one way to generalize our things. And there is a generic discussion saying that bulk mass can come from tachyons of D8 bar, because D8 and D8 bar are associated with these two gauge transformations, or those are chiral symmetric transformations, and then four. The bulk mass term should transform as a bifundamental.
The side-by-side expectation value,
presumably
yes.
Well, so that's why I mentioned here the Stern phase, where the Stern phase means that, okay, side-by-side is zero, while psi by psi squared is not zero. So this is called Stern phase. And the usual way of understanding the spontaneous chiral symmetry breaking is psi by psi is zero.
Right.
And now there is a theoretical possibility that you have this phase.
So this is some quite non-standard chiral symmetry breaking.
Right, that's correct. So that's why I mentioned at last this possibility of having tachyons rather than introducing instantons. You know, there are infinitely many ways to express the chiral symmetry. And now, I followed the intuition from the D-brain computation where you have flow and default brain can be separated from D8. Then I got this. But it's possible that there are some other ways to have a deformation of this septum, which may implement all of these nice things in a standard way. Yes?
So, phenomenologically, is it clear that one way of breaking chiral symmetry breaking in real life compared to another is established?
Phenomenologically?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Sorry
about the stone phases, mm-hmm. Part of the question. The phases is describing is that.
Yeah, I think so. But it's still a subtle problem of comparing, for example, the higher order terms in chiral perturbations. That's how you can compare the experimental results with this chiral perturbation. Right. So if you invoke this stone phase, then you get a certain route for writing down the chiral emergence. So here, there is a symmetry of flipping the sign of psi by psi in this general case. So that restricts the possible chiral emergence terms. So that's the way. But unfortunately, in the experimental results, there are non-zero coefficients for those strings. So that's why this strong phase is from the domain. But my situation is a little bit different from the strong phase. So I'm not sure. I have to compare all of the coefficients. And the essence of this discussion is not just reproducing the chiral algorithm, but to go into the further deeper part of nuclear physics. For example, I'm working on the derivation of nuclear force.
You haven't told us what the proton is.
Sure. Barium. Yeah, the barium, yes. So briefly speaking, so the barium has been introduced by Eaton in this ADS-CFP setup to have
five grain,
yes.
Yeah, but it's different.
Right, in this case, this is a T-dot to that, so it's a D4 grain. And yes, so I added the D4 grain in this way, but if you add the D4 grain in a different way, then that can sort of behave as a particle in the first modification. And that is the barrier.
So what is the D4 grain wrapped on?
So in this picture, it's completely localized.
So it's wrapped on something else that I can't see.
Yep.
It's wrapped, though.
It's wrapped, yes. Sorry?
And your force here again?
Right. So yeah. It's so let's consider, for example, the instanton. It is the MC D4 grain.
Yeah.
And that is the barrier. And there is a nice relationship between this instanton in high energy space and spurgets.
But how do you describe the spectral variance, just by the way you wrap these grains, or how do you...
So let me go back to the first chart here and see like this. So if you consider a D4 grain, which wraps the angular direction of this, then that is completely localized in this X1, X2, X3, X4. So it's a particle in 3+ modification, and it's also localized in X4 space. So that is an instanton in this 4+1 dimensional model. So it's completely localized in these 4 dimensions.
Wait, so the baryon is then the wrap grain with strings connected to the 8 grains?
So here there is no necessity to have a string connecting those. So you can just consider instanton, Young's instanton, in this four-dimensional space. That's a solitonic organization.
Yes. Yeah.
Then, so now you have a nice description of pions. And then here I added four pions at the nest. Then, if barons are very far from each other, then of course the force between those two should be just one pion exchange. It's known from the Kawasera. And then the problem is to find a nice description of this repulsion force when those are placed quite next to each other. Yes. And now we have a clear understanding of higher dimensional objects.
Well, yes, what is the, there must be some gauge boson that's coupled to the barrier, omega.
Right.
Well, where is that in the...
So it should be just a flavor counting symmetry. So those should be associated with overall U1 values.
So those, what kind of strings are they?
So it's a quark number, right? A binary quark number.
Yeah.
So that should be. I don't remember quite correctly, but it should be a
correlation. Was it 8 R strings or
something? No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah. So now in a strong coupling region, we are connected. So this overall U1 phase should be quark.
But is there a way to understand, because baryons and mesons here are in the picture made of different things that
sure.
Smash baryons, produce mesons, and are you connected to them?
Yeah, yes, that's so in higher dimensional language, it's just the same as instanton collisions. So you have two instantons, and those are networks. something you smash it.
Yeah.
Then that for if you have an instance of outliers, then they annihilate, then they give some outgoing waves of gauge leaves. And those are decomposed in terms of constant levels. And those are mesons. And that is precisely the transition from nucleons to mesons. So it's completely well organized, unified. So currently I'm working on a derivation of this policy
form. Well, that's supposed to be the omega.
Right, right. It should be seen.
Where the hell is the omega, though?
that's a kind of question. Yes, I have to accept that.
But it's there.
Yes.
It has to be
there. Okay, so this is the.
But you're in the larger unit, so your bions contain n quarks. So
yes, that's true. But if you look at just the bound state of them, then I think that that is kind of quite reasonable to extract kind of large amount of. Okay, so thank you very much.